Now, there's a lot going on around the world and it can feel kind of overwhelming at times. But one of the stories that could actually change the shape of the world we live in substantially is the potential collapse of the regime in Iran. Channel 4 News foreign correspondent Padraig O'Brien, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan.
Padraig, last night saw the 13th consecutive night of protests in Iran, and you've been covering them for Channel 4. And I know communications with Iran were particularly bad yesterday, but do we know what happened last night?
We don't exactly, Brendan. I've been talking to friends and colleagues, Iranian friends and colleagues who have family inside Iran just this morning. And what we're looking at is a near complete information blackout. The regime has clamped down on media access, has severely limited access to the internet. The only reason we're getting any information, it would seem, out of Iran at the moment is because a number of years ago, activists smuggled in Starlinks, that's Elon Musk's satellite system, into the country. So we're getting dribs and drabs, but it is not looking good. The fact, number one, that the regime has done that at all is a very ominous sign in terms of a potentially violent clampdown. We are getting bits. And what I can say is that these protests are on a magnitude and at a scale we haven't seen before. I've covered various different cycles of demonstrations and protests in Iran, but it would appear to me that we're talking about something very different this time round in terms of its geographical spread, in terms of the types of people that are coming out onto the street, and in terms of the anger and violence we're seeing unfold on the streets of Iran.
Okay, and there are different contexts this time, not least the broader context of Iran and a lot of its allies gone, Syria, etc. But is there an interesting background here? I know this started with the economy and it was shopkeepers and everything. Is there a background here, Padraig, of a younger generation as well who just don't accept living in a theocracy, isolated from the world anymore, with poor economic prospects?
Absolutely. I mean, that's always part of these cycles of demonstrations and protests we see in Iran. The most notable, most recent one back in 2022, you remember the women life freedom protests in Iran. That was sparked by a young Iranian Kurdish woman who died in police custody. She was pulled over by the so-called morality police in Iran for wearing her hijab in the wrong way. That sparked a whole wave of protests driven by young women in Iran. This time round, it is different, or at least the origins of this cycle of demonstrations are different. As you say, it started with shopkeepers. It actually started 2 weeks ago in the commercial section of Tehran around the Grand Bazaar with mobile phone and electronics vendors, because their businesses were getting absolutely hammered. They're importing mobile phones and electric equipment. The currency there so devalued that their businesses were on their knees. So those shopkeepers brought the shutters down, literally went on strike in Tehran. But now that's snowballed into something far broader in terms of its political and cultural reach. But you know, when the shopkeepers revolt, yeah, you know you're in trouble. And this has become something much more than that, though. I mean, just to give you a kind of personalized sense of this, Brendan, we've been trying as best we can to talk to the demonstrators going out onto the street. But one young woman I was talking to 2 days ago, her story really got to me. She was just about to head out onto the demonstrations. And just before she hit the streets, she told me she did a makeshift will and, you know, wrote it down, put it in an envelope, stuck it in a drawer and went out onto the streets. And the reason she did that, she said, was that, yes, you know, she said she was afraid of a backlash. She was afraid of violence on the streets, but she had nothing left to lose. Yeah. And that expression, I've nothing left to lose, is what you hear over and over and over again from Iranians of all generations.
Yeah, it reminds me of that social media video in one of your reports during the week. A kind of a woman of a certain age, blood streaming down her face, shouting, "I'm not afraid, I've been dead for 47 years.
That's right. And I mean, you know, we're getting you know, one iconic image or Instagrammable moment doesn't the collapse of a regime make, but though that sort of imagery is coming in like thick and fast. People writing graffiti, you know, bring back the Shah, death to Khomeini, taking down the Islamic Republic flag, sort of shredding it on the street, the collapse of statues like the old IRGC commander. That sort of imagery, we're seeing a lot of that. Now, I stress this doesn't necessarily mean the collapse of the regime. Mm. And we need to be more sort of specific about what we mean when we say the collapse of the regime. My read, for what it's worth, is that I don't think we are necessarily experiencing a sort of a classic revolutionary type moment where, you know, thousands of people storm the radio and TV stations and the whole regime collapse. I'm not sure we're seeing that. I suspect if this continues, what we may see is some sort of more coup-like scenario where that top security elite, the IRGC in Iran, starts to splinter, starts to turn on itself, starts to turn on the leadership. I think that's what you should be looking out for more than that classic sort of revolutionary collapse type moment.
Okay. And could that then see the regime pivot, if you will, to become more acceptable to what the people want? Yeah,
it could do. I mean, it's you know, back to the old, it's the economy stupid adage. But it also is more than that. I mean, it's worth pointing out to people that there are other things at play here, much more broader macroeconomic factors. So, like, just one example, Iran has been experiencing a severe water shortage, an absolute crisis, for months and months and months now. It's literally got to the point where in places in Iran, you go to turn on the tap and nothing comes out. I mean, it's cost of living. It's people that feel they're at a cultural, political, and complete economic dead end. Nowhere left to go. Can't afford to save. Can't afford to buy basics. So where do you go next? That's the big question. But it does feel different to me this time around, these demonstrations. It does feel like a people at the very end of that dead end.
Okay. Two other factors in this that are different that I want to ask you about. So you mentioned there about the people chanting "Long live the Shah," and we have the Shah's son, the crown prince in exile, if you will, in America, this Reza Pahlavi. He has been trying to insert himself. He has always tried to insert himself at these times, hasn't he? But is there a sense that he is inserting himself more successfully and stoking the flames more in his favour on this occasion?
Yes, there is. He is a complicated character. As you say, the son of the last Shah, the last crown prince. He's living just outside Washington, has done for most of his adult life. I mean, if you'd have told me, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, that it would have been his name that they would have been chanting on the streets, I wouldn't have believed you, but that is where we're at. He is not a consensual figure necessarily for the Iranian opposition. There is an element, he does have support in Iran, but there is an element of him and his position being something symbolic. So part nostalgia for perceived better times, you know, pre the revolution. There is an element of this that he represents real political opposition, and he is seen by some as the only available focal point, if you like, for democratic transition. But he is a complicated character. He represents different things to different people. But crucially, I think the internal opposition in Iran is not organized. They are either in prison or silenced, but he is definitely the symbolic focal point, I think, on the streets for many Iranians at the moment.
Extraordinary. 40 years on, almost to the week since that regime toppled and the Shah left Iran. The other factor that is here is Trump. So your report on Thursday, we saw a social media video of a man using a large kind of a label to change a street name in Tehran to President Trump Street, which is a long way away from Death to the Great Satan, the USA and all that. So two questions. Have we any idea if there's a widespread view in Iran of Trump as a potential saviour? And secondly, do you think Trump is minded to step in here?
Good question. I mean, he's definitely... So the background to this is that a couple of weeks ago, Trump came out and said that if the regime violently reacts and starts killing protesters en masse, I think the quote from Trump was that the US is locked and loaded, ready to strike. That has done two things. That has emboldened protesters. So we see, as you say, that man renaming a street. But it's also put the regime itself in a bind, right? To what degree will they clamp down with this threat from Trump? Will they try and call his bluff? Will they try and test the assertion that the US might get involved if the violence reaches a certain level? That is a very difficult call to make if you are the Iranian regime.
Okay. And do you think Trump wants to get involved?
I would have said before his taking Nicolas Maduro out of bed in his pajamas last week, I would have said I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure, but I think that that will be inevitably part of the calculation that the regime will have to make in terms of its preservation. And the Maduro incident and what's happening in Venezuela, you know, it's more than just about Maduro. Remember, once upon a time, Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader, described Venezuela as its closest international ally. And Venezuela was a conduit for a lot of the financing that ended, the oil and the financing that propped up, that was the sort of lifeline for the IRGC and for lots of the security apparatus there. So kind of cutting the legs off the economics that fund the shadow economy that funds lots of this regime, I think may turn out to be more significant in a way than the kind of rhetoric that we're hearing from Trump at the
okay.
moment.
All these moving parts and all interconnected. And listen, Padraig, there, that's an excellent insight into it all, kind of away from all the noise of the past week. Thank you very much. Channel 4 foreign correspondent Padraig O'Brien.